that on the record.
Yeah, it's recording on, it's a 30 minutes on a side, so. Just maybe you could start telling us where, if you always lived in Bucks County.
No, I was brought up in Fort Washington, on a farm. The rest of my family still lives in that neighborhood. My brothers and sisters and their descendants.
Yeah.
And we discovered this place just by sheer accident. After the war, we were looking for property. And I just off the grapevine learned about this bidding for sale. Never heard of Carversville. Where's that? And when we acquired it, it was just nothing but almost a shell of a house. No shrubbery, a lot of poison ivy growing up the chimneys. It was pretty sad.
Were there other houses nearby?
Just about what you see now. Yeah. This has not changed very much. And it had enough acreage around it, all grown up into jungle.
What year was that then?
1947.
Yeah.
So you've been here over 30 years.
Were you in that water business then?
I was just getting started. I not only wanted a place to live, but a centralized location to set up my business of water analysis. And when we bought the house, then this wing where we are now was built on specifically for the business. Room where we are now was the laboratory, and it looks quite different now.
It could be a lab, yeah.
Well, there were laboratory cabinets all the way around the sides with all the fantastic equipment, and where we have this nice table in the middle was a large work area. Two husky women in white dresses bossing me around all day long. Well, because I was out on the road doing the field work most of the time, and they were running the business. It was an extremely active place.
Yeah.
So it grew and grew and got more and more crowded. Uh-huh. Then we built the office wing on to a little elasticity.
Yeah.
And finally, in 1969, life just got so complicated with all the new environmental requirements coming along that I had to make a decision: either pour a fortune into it and expand to have new equipment, more personnel, a bigger business.
Yeah.
My decision, rather than to go into that, was to sell myself. So I sold my soul and all my clientele to Quality Control Laboratory. Moved in with them in Southampton.
So you have probably a degree in microbiology? No.
That's the anachronism of the whole thing. I have no scientific degrees.
Isn't it?
I did quite a bit of postgraduate study at the University of Pennsylvania after the war, but I didn't fulfill any of the requirements for a degree. I was just busy taking courses.
Yeah.
Running around like a squirrel trying to learn biology and soil and water chemistry.
Yeah.
Under the great Dr. Ruth Patrick, who is now chairman of the Academy of Natural Sciences, she was my guide.
Did you do any poetry writing at that time?
A little. Over the years, there's always been a little, but I guess the era of most of it was parallel to the business years, say the 50s and 60s.
Did you ever publish it, or did you know?
I self-published one book, knowing it was going to be fairly expensive, knowing that you don't make a profit off of publishing poetry, but just the urging of so many of my friends, people I'd insulted in my poetry, put the needle into.
It was the same type of poetry then that you were still writing.
And I'll give you a copy of
that.
And so we took the best. My son helped me with the critical editing, and the late Austin Waring was my senior guide. The book is dedicated to him. very good friend, just gone through his demise last month.
Not familiar with that name, but...
He was quite a guy. I sort of adopted him.
Yeah. To look your poetry over.
Yeah, we worked on many things together. I got to know him through the environmental challenges of the area, and we just became best friends.
That's too bad.
So I worked with Quality Control for 9 years, running their water and wastewater division. So when I dumped my clientele on them, that was more than they'd had before.
I guess you're already retired.
And then, I don't like that word very much.
I know, but...
I faded out.
Oh, well, that's okay if you want.
I phased myself out last year. I trained a successor to the new work. Most of my work by then was consulting, because I wasn't doing any analytical work. I'd forgotten all the chemistry and biology. I just was doing an advisory service to mostly industrial. I ended up as an industrial waste specialist. All the stinking stuff that goes down the drains.
But that's kind of a thing today.
It is. It's a
really
big thing. And if I just hadn't had so many interests, I probably would have kept on. But it had low priority with all the other things that there are to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to get back to more writing. And that time, the editor of Panorama was pushing me pretty hard, dumping assignments on me faster than I could turn them out. And I wanted to edit some of the material that had been dashed off in previous years, and get back a little more attention to the environmental work. See, you're also sitting in the office of the Quonicussie Watershed Association, which I run with one hand. With help, I mean, there are various members of the community that didn't help. But it's a citizen's organization to keep track
of. Make sure the government does the right thing.
Government does the right thing, and idiots don't do the wrong thing. And it's a protective
situation. Needed.
And there are watershed associations all over, as you probably know. We're one of the smallest. Some of them are huge groups.
It's all
paid staffs. This is nobody gets paid here. We're all just volunteer workers. But some days out on these tables are spread all kinds of watershed work, and people are in here doing the office end of it.
I read these in the paper about these things. I don't know too much about them, but I'm glad somebody's watching over.
We'll give you a write-up
the
on that.
Dams,
because we
and
have
the,
a sheet that tells what we're doing. And then this association and all others belong to a jawbreaker organization called the Mid-Atlantic Associate Council of Watershed Associations. I just finished serving my sentence as president of that. Last month was happy to turn over all the black box and all the documents to a successor, and sit in the back row now. For the last 3 years, I've been chairing their regular meetings.
Yeah, it's a big
riding
job.
Herd on everybody.
Yeah.
It's enough. It's time for someone else to handle it.
Maybe we'll have you read a few, whatever you want. Is there
I'll let you pick one out.
I always think that perhaps the person who writes poetry can read it better, or...
I'm not sure, because I have so seldom read it.
Do you want to?
We'll try it.
So out of some of these, or...
Unfinished Journey. Oh, little squirrel, how soon you died. Because, unable to decide, in mid-road suddenly you turned. Lesson all too dearly learned. Hold it. It's the clocks. The bloody, domineering, ticking-tacking clocks that supervise our very inner lives. inventors of timepieces, chronometers, acutrons, may you rest your temporal behinds on hot rocks in hell for ever having developed mankind's clocks. Inexorably reminding, goading, overloading, grinding, making short of our otherwise free selves. Ever so small are the remaining unmeasured day. Heaven is paved with streets of gold, or so we are told. Who works for the Department of Sanitation after salvation? Here's a favorite. Mrs. Archimedes sponged the bathroom floor and muttered, "Damn these childish floating toys. I shouldn't let him use them anymore. And his eurekas make an awful noise." More intuition. "Why waste your time," asked Mrs. Henry Ford, "with those contraptions no one could repair? What else do you consider the good Lord made horses for if not to get us there?"
Yeah, we like that one.
"If the little green men and the flying saucers come, tell them I'll be up at 9 in the morning. Because I was awake late last night, agonizing over our plight if they do not appear." Mayhem. "Poor plastered pussy on the public paving. Your very vital viscera dispersed. There's now no little bit of you worth saving. Your eyeballs even from your brain case burst. What sneaking speedy simpleton has slaughtered you and left your kittens catless? Left your master with you drawn and quartered, a basement that no longer will be ratless." Austin Waring's comment on that was horrible.
Yeah, violent tape poetry. And these did come, like you said, from your having driven around so much.
That's the kind that you pick up. Literally, you pick up along the road.
Do you ever have any poems for other motorists? Because
they're not fit to print.
No. Yeah.
I've learned from my daughter what to call other motorists, and I don't think it should be attempted. Ah, so. "The morning brought new journeys with the breeze, a sunlit window open to the world. Bright castles, turrets, panoplies unfurled, high-sailing ships, white islands, restless seas, peaks of the Rockies above the sweeping plain, dense forests, majestic beasts of prey. The darkness comes, another end of day, and time to take the garbage out again. Reshelve those ventures worthy of great kings."
Back down to earth.
I have a favorite cartoon of a gentleman of portly stature standing in front of a full-length mirror dressed in his Shriner's costume with all the trimmings of the cocked hat and the sword, and he's practicing his bows to the high almighty of the shrine before he goes to the meeting, and his wife calls up the stairs, "Horace, you forgot to take the garbage out."
From the New Yorker, maybe. That just sounds like him.
Possibly.
Look at the time signature.
Go with it. Well, this was written from life, church secretary. "Make light your language as you give those windy speeches by the hour. I disregard each adjective and declamation soon deflower. Even the pastor's deathless prose is massacred," and so it goes.
Yeah.
I'm kidding our church secretary about the way she chopped things down
really?
To size.
Yeah. I can imagine you'd have fun with some sermons, maybe.
It's a good thing that one has to sit still and not talk back during the service.
Right.
It You ever been to Pavel Hill Church?
No, I...
Listen to the chorus that accompanies Gordon's sermons.
No. I haven't been in church in quite a while, but I was raised a Catholic, and I got so I talked back quite a lot. In fact, I couldn't go anymore.
During Gordon's sermons, it's just a standard practice to ad lib.
Yeah.
He puts up with it.
It's good. Maybe it'd be nice if people could.
It's dangerous. Three quarter. Johann Strauss, I can do mid alts. Now, I was standing in some ceremonial hall waiting to talk to a customer one day, and in the banquet room off to the in the distance was a luncheon going on. And this one I just jotted down while waiting my turn to see some big shot in his office. Behind the potted palms they stand, violin, viola, violoncello, and grind along with practiced hand and strike music scarcely mellow. The guests, partaking of a lunch, melodically remain unswayed, watercress sandwiches and punch. No thought that musicians must be paid. The oddest things come to you, the oddest moments. Oh, and this one, bookmobile. High above the illiterate world she sits, looks out among the peasants on the ground. Novelists, historians, philosophers, and wits behind her horn-rimmed personage abound. No other thing on earth to me appeals like a lovely blonde librarian on wheels.
That's cute. I used to go to bookmobile when I was little, I don't know.
So you see things as you travel. If ever I should stand in doubt of a vegetable, a Brussels sprout, no matter how well cooked or sauced, on me is absolutely lost. Plainly their sight and smell I hate, push them to the north pole of my plate.
That's cute. Kids would love that. I think it's just, it kind of hits a real human. I think maybe that's what makes poetry good, though, if you can really make people remember something similar that happened to them.
To remind them of something in their own experience.
Yeah.
But actually, the majority of this, which is really light verse, comes from some incident or some strange thought.
Been nice. We should have you. We have those creative writing students there. And we kind of debated by having you come down there.
I'm kind of critical of, I guess it's because this is my style, is don't get too heavy.
Uh-huh.
You can be serious.
Yeah.
And also you can be serious and then suddenly drop a bomb line at the end. So that it's not too lachrymose or something with a dash of sarcasm in it. But whether the student body would go for that, because I'm likely to criticize heavy poetry.
Mm-hmm. They would be writing themselves. I know some of it's depressing.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't do anything for you, really.
And some of it is overtried, like, writing blank verse, forget who it was, whether it was Robert Frost or Eliot or one of the famous who said, writing blank verse is like playing tennis without a net. You have to be good to do it.
I'm sure you do.
Not many Walt Whitmans around.
I did.
Or William Carlos Williams. He not only wrote blank verse, but he tried to ignore punctuation as much as possible.
They don't put capital letters in a lot either.
That's a matter of style. I noticed Mr. Burke does not use capital letters at the beginning of his lines. Well, Some do, some don't. Yeah. I think that's just a matter of taste. But then you can go too far and get cute, like E.E. Cummings, by not using any capital letters. Or was it Archie the Cockroach that couldn't use any capital letters because he couldn't get the ship key hard enough?
Oh, is that it? Maybe they aren't typed very well, huh? Or maybe they're very broke.
And then a lot of so-called poetry is dribbled down the page, one or two words to a line. That's been overtried.
It takes a lot of space if you're going to publish it, too.
Sure, it takes up a page in a hurry. But
yes.
If you're being paid by the word, it's not very good. But I think a lot of that, they try too hard. But the other side of that situation is, in writing poetry with verse and meter, with rhyme and meter, is watch out that it doesn't get sing-song. It doesn't become doggerel.
Having read a few of their poetry.
Some of this I've written is very close to doggerel, which is a monotonous form. I don't think so, technically how you
the average person that thinks they're going to write poetry, that's where it comes from. They don't.
Sometimes it can be entertaining, funny, get across a point. But I've had a lot of poetry sent to me by friends and relatives, often in response to something I've dashed. I mightn't say mine is so great, it's just so-so. But they don't have a feel for meter. And they'll force their rhymes.
Well, I guess I know what you mean. I'm not...
Well, you pick up the Protestant hymnal and see some god-awful rhymes. That
you have a poem somewhere about that, yes. I know exactly what you mean.
Some of the most famous of our hymns, the rhyme in them is fearsomely strained.
Yeah. You would have fun with a lot of hymnals.
Well, where do you think they were written? Sunday mornings.
I made them fit into the music. A lot of times they were translated, weren't they, from another language, and they have to fit the tune.
Yes, well, that was the worst example of that is A Mighty Fortress. It's almost untranslatable.
Yeah.
It really took a couple of shoehorns to get that thing into English meter. Foursquare and true good Isaac Watts wrote hymns to stand us on our feet. Revered the Lord and called his shots. Abused some rhymes, but kept them neat. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, when Luther wrote his hymns of might, they gave strong heart to many sects. He never dreamed they'd be a fright when tortured into English texts.
Yeah. True.
Charles Wesley, heart full of heavenly grace, wrote hymns in keeping with his times. Jammed four-syllable words into two-syllable space. Violently crucified his rhymes.
So it goes. Some of the Catholic hymnals.
I guess I haven't seen
You haven't seen them, right?
I guess there's some terrors in there.
Yeah, they've done away with
they're using
a
lot of the Protestant hymns. They realize that the Protestant hymns won't really send them to purgatory, and they're willing to try them.
Some were really terrible.
See, I taught comparative religion for years. All through, I had high school classes, Sunday school, whose kids are now coming into the class.
Yeah.
It frightens me a little. Whole generation's coming up.
That's interesting.
But for years, I taught comparative religion to those young people, and would take them to many different churches, to the synagogue, Quaker meeting. The whole works.
I think that would be very interesting.
And then we'd talk about it.
Yeah.
I'd give them some background. And some of those, they're not kids. They're young people in their 30s. Anybody over 30 isn't young, I'm told.
No.
They'd come to me even today and say they remember some of those ventures we went on.
Uh-huh.
Those trips.
It'd be a very good thing.
Our adult membership is after me to do the same thing. But we hit an open switch, and instead of that, we're we're organizing a tour to Israel. So this fall, instead of the standard fare, they're going to get a background course on Israel, on the Holy Land.
For students?
Well, anyone who's going on the trip or anybody else that's interested, mm-hmm. whether they go or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I said to the people who want to go on the trip, which is being organized by our pastor, let's do our homework first. Let's not just
a lot of religions.
Bang over there and not understand what we're being shown and told.
Yeah.
So we're going to spend the fall studying. Reports on them from as far as a mile away.
Maybe.
Well, I went through the usual routine of school and college magazine writing and editing, and as one looks back on that, and it looks pretty sad. It's something you really don't want to remember too well, because it was so amateurish compared to what everybody grows.
I
guess for its time and age, it was all right. And then I got into horticultural writing during my early work here in the laboratory, and was co-editor of the Horticultural Newsletter for some years, which folded, as so many magazines do. It's been like enough profit to survive, but it was interesting work. And I had the responsibility for most of the articles, short, descriptive articles, critical of trade products and the like of that. And then I had to do a good deal of writing during business years, promotional material, and articles on soils and water and pollution and the whole bit, what you call technical material. I wrote for the New Hub Gazette for a year, or did a column. And I've had articles in several of the farm magazines over that period. Then, as we know recently, I got to know the personnel of the late Panorama magazine, did quite a bit for them. The usual stack of unpublished, and a lot of it unpublishable materials. Some of it not clean enough to publish.
Well, maybe someday you can.
Yeah, fun, maybe. Clean it up, tidy it up a little bit, and the inevitable novel that I haven't been able to sell yet, because everybody has a novel somewhere in the closet. And now I'm working on this, what you see in front of you, and several file drawers full of reference material, an article on Bucks County farm economics and the future of farming in our own area, well, actually the Delaware Valley. Which was going to be in Panorama, but unfortunately bankruptcy got there first, and the Bristol Courier Times had bought it, and it'll be in their Sunday supplements for 3 weeks in October. So the deadline on that is breathing upon my back. And it takes a lot of research. It's the most detailed article I've ever written. Have to get into the facts so much. But I've been getting information from all over the world, literally, on the subject.
You'll have to send us a copy.
Well, it'll be there, and then there's some talk that the Conservation Alliance may want to reprint it.
I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in that subject.
Forest Hunts are going to pick it up and have a reprint run on it. But it's interesting. It's not really my field. It's economics. Confound me, but and everybody else,
well,
I guess.
I suppose, huh?
But nonetheless, it's turning out pretty well. I've written part one. There's two more parts to do. The writing isn't as difficult as the
getting the facts,
getting it organized. And then I've done a lot of research and some writing on the American Revolution, which is a favorite subject. I've got a lot of material that has not been shaped up yet. And first the bicentennial ran by in a big hurry, and I didn't get too much. I did a couple for Panorama on the Revolution. that satire on George Washington trying to cross the Delaware River in spite of all the environmental regulations. And some other whimsy like that.
Yeah.
And I've kind of gotten mine to tackle John Lacey, who was a principal character through this whole period. He was there.
General. He lived in the Ryman House, used it for a while.
So